happy Friday out there. April 5th, 2019. Welcome to the Clemson Dubcast. Busy, busy, busy week at TigerIllustrated.com. Busiest for Paul Strelo, our recruiting maestro, who is doing all the juggling as we lead into a star-studded visit weekend accompanying the spring game. Dabo Swinney and Clemson, of course, doing a wonderful job of showcasing themselves to all these stud recruits and their families. Also later today at TigerIllustrated.com, we have the introduction to what I believe is going to be a fantastic series of articles next week on the life story of Brent Venables. Most of you probably don't know a whole lot about Venables' upbringing, childhood, all that, what he's all about. I got to tell you, I was honored to write Dabo Swinney's life story back in November of 2008. And the Brent Venables story, every bit as compelling and wrenching and just really amazing. So we're going to have more on that later today, sort of the intro to that series. And then for most of next week, we're going to have it in full. So if you are not already a subscriber to TigerIllustrated.com, no better time than right now. A lot of good stuff coming up, trust me. The title sponsor of the Clemson Dubcast is Parham Smith and Archenhold Law Firm in Greenville. Blake Smith and Brooke Archenhold, both Clemson grads, huge fans. They are also responsible for those Clemson Dubcast koozies you might have seen floating around. I actually handed out plenty of those a few days ago in Spartanburg over at the Freight Yard. Really appreciate them doing that. Also, the forte of their firm is medical negligence. They represent patients and their family members in medical negligence actions. Also handle all sorts of other complex personal injury litigation. For instance, they handled the Cleveland Park rollover case. Also handled the GHS infection cases. Very complex stuff that they're highly trained to do. And they're in the business to help people. They offer free consultations at Parham Smith and Archenhold. So give them a call, 864-990-4581. If you're a business owner in Clemson, Greenville, South Carolina, the Southeast, anywhere, you probably want to hear about Tandem Payment and what they have to offer. If your business accepts credit cards, you probably need to see what these guys are all about. Tandem Payment, based right here in the upstate, changing the face of payment processing, quickly becoming the most cost-effective solution for all small businesses. Tandem's program, which is based on applying a small customer service charge to each transaction, ends up saving your business up to 90% of previous processing charges. One of the owners of Tandem is a 2005 Clemson grad. Instead of entrusting the majority of your hard-earned money to someone over the phone, you can meet face-to-face with the Tandem representatives and their consultative approach. So give them a call at 864-672-1570 or online at tandempayment.com. Okay, this is a really special interview about a special guy. Bryson Carter, I met about a little over, I guess, a week and a half ago at a speaking engagement in Anderson with some Clemson folks, and met him before the speaking engagement, sat down with him, ate dinner, learned that he has gone to 165 straight Clemson football games, home and road. He's blind, and most of these games he manages to get to by himself. Just a really remarkable story. And after talking to him before that speaking engagement, I told the crowd, y'all got the wrong person talking to you. This guy should be talking to y'all right now. So yesterday, Thursday, Bryson and I gathered at the Abernathy Boutique Hotel right there in Clemson. Went to the bar, got a beer, went over to one of their event rooms off to the side to get some peace and quiet with one of those big windows overlooking Highway 93 and Lower Lot 2, all the hustle and bustle going on in Clemson right now. The Abernathy was a great spot for Bryson and I to conduct this interview in a real laid-back setting, and it's definitely a really good spot for you to unwind after work, stop by, plenty of parking, which, as you know, is in very, very short supply around Clemson right now. So highly recommend Taps Bar and Cafe over at the Abernathy. Gary Cohen, the general manager, is there to answer any questions you have about reservations or possible events that you can host there. So give them a look online at theabernathy.com. All right, we're here with Bryson Carter. Man, met you about a week ago at a speaking engagement in Anderson, and that was the highlight of my night, was meeting you.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I feel the same way. It was kind of last minute. I had kind of forgotten about the event, to be quite honest, unfortunately. And thankfully, I had texted one of my friends, David, and asked him, can we just show up? I didn't RSVP for the event, and he encouraged me to go, so I'm thankful that he did. And we had a great time, and I would encourage everybody to come out to future events in Anderson or whatever community they're in for their local Clemson clubs.
Yeah, this was an Anderson area Clemson club where they asked me to come speak and talk about the new book. And refresh my memory on the time frame, but at some point within the last year, you were given a Courage Award by the Anderson Clemson Club?
I apologize. I don't remember the name of the specific award, but it was given to me by the Anderson Area Clemson Club last July, August, somewhere in that timeline, their kickoff event for the new year. So I did not know that was going to take place. So it was a great surprise, and I'm thankful that they asked me to come, and it was great to meet all of them and try my best to be involved with Anderson Area Clemson Club.
I want to say it was the Spirit and Courage Award, maybe something like that, but I apologize for not getting the specifics of that right. Okay, so you started losing your vision in college, is that correct?
Well, I would say beginning of high school, maybe somewhere around age 15, 16. I don't have an exact date, but started noticing changes in my eyesight, trying to take notes off the overhead projector in class, probably in the 9th, 10th grade, somewhere in that time frame. And also outside, really started having issues with being able to see with bright sunlight, and got to the point where I started wearing sunglasses on a regular basis outside. And from there, was not sure. I had been wearing glasses off and on since I was probably 5 or 6 years old, and for whatever reason, you know, that wasn't helping me anymore. You know, they tell you to sit in the front of the class and wear your glasses. And, you know, your parents, they try to stay on you because you're not doing those things, or you're doing those things, but you're complaining about it. And even with doing those things, wearing the glasses or trying to sit in the front of the class, those tools just were not helping me anymore. So back and forth to the local eye clinic in Florence where I grew up, and they referred me because they were not sure exactly what was taking place with my eyesight. So they suggested that I go to one of three places, either Massachusetts Eye in Boston or to Duke Medical Center in Durham. And the third place they suggested I go to was MUSC in Charleston. So we decided, Massachusetts, that's pretty far, so that was out. And we ended up going to MUSC, and thankful to, as a teenager, I guess could have gone either way, and, you know, 15, 16, 17 years old, they put me on the pediatric side, and thankful for that, because sometimes you get treated with kids' gloves, you get treated a little nicer mm-hmm. by the doctors if you're on the pediatric side. So I was seen by a retina specialist at MUSC, and they diagnosed me with retinitis pigmentosa. I don't remember the exact date or age that I was, but somewhere in high school, 16, 17. And that is typically a disorder or a disease, whatever term you want to use, that is hereditary. We're not sure if anybody in my family has had it. And it is progressive disease typically. So from there, just continue to have changes in my eyesight and continue to be monitored at MUSC. Senior year of high school, really, from the beginning to the end of my senior year of high school, had a lot of changes to where I love going during lunch and going to the library and read the newspaper and the news section and sports section. And a few times during the spring of my senior year, the librarian, she would come over and she'd say, "Where are your glasses?" And because my nose was pretty much pressed against the paper because I was just having issues not really being able to see from a far distance at all. And so continued, you know, to progress from there. And freshman year at Clemson, it seemed like it was stable for the most part, somewhat, after losing a good chunk. And but then my sophomore year seems like kind of went downhill from there, and it was hard to deal with, as would be for anybody, I think. And I was having a hard time getting around campus, some mobility issues, and I was really frustrated, and became depressed, and it was hard to be hard at any age, but especially at that age, that to try and deal with. And I didn't know how to handle it, and I didn't know really who to get help from. And so, you know, at some point I wasn't doing well in class, and I was really struggling, and so got my grades were really poor, and I got suspended from Clemson, and so moved back home and wasn't really sure what to do. And after that point, I ended up having cataract surgery, which made it a little easier to see during the daytime. But up until that point, it had been easier to see at night or in dim light. And after the cataract surgery, it seemed like for me it was harder to see in those dim lights or at nighttime. So that was an adjustment as well. And over time, working different jobs and back and forth, the Clemson area living, and just over time, progressively, eyesight got worse. And I would say since 2011, my eyesight's been stable, and thankfully I do have light perception, so I can tell if it's light or dark, you know, the sunlight. And I can see shadows still. So I can tell you sitting there, you know, I can see outlines or shadows or shapes. So that is helpful. And I would say since 2011, 2012, somewhere in that time frame, that's kind of where my eyesight's been. And hopefully it'll stay that way and I won't lose the little bit of light perception and shadows that I can see. Hopefully that will stay throughout my life. And the doctors, I don't know that they can really determine that for me or not, or for anybody that would have the same disorder that I do.
So we're sitting here late on Thursday afternoon here. We're recording this inside the conference room at the Abernathy Hotel. There's a big old window beside us, and so the sun's shining through. So that helps you?
Well, I would say at this point, I don't know that it really helps me or hurts me. And also just because through some of the adjustment and the blindness training that I received at the Louisiana Center for the Blind in 2014, they're affiliated with National Federation of the Blind, I'm not really trying to use the limited eyesight that I have left. And so I don't know that sunlight's really helping or hurting.
Okay. But the shadows...
I mean, when I say shadows, I mean I can see kind of an outline or a figure.
Gotcha.
of you or anybody else, and I don't think it's really determined based on how much sunlight mm-hmm. there is.
Okay,
But in the past, definitely, I would be wearing sunglasses, and that sunlight would be killing me, and I might even ask you to close the blinds in the past.
So rewinding, I guess perhaps to high school, or maybe beyond that, more recently, when was the first time somebody told you, I guess, the possible gravity, like the possibility of you can go blind, like when you were first diagnosed in high school? Was that when they told you?
I was sitting in the local eye doctor's office, who shall remain nameless, in Florence, and they basically yelled at my mom that I was going to go blind one day. And I think they were frustrated with us and we with them, because we were asking lots of questions. And this was an eye doctor, an eye doctor office that I had been going to off and on since I was probably 5 or 6 years old. And they were not sure what was taking place with my eyesight. And they were not able to answer our questions, you know, my family's or mine. And they basically just yelled out, "Well, you're going to go blind one day." Mm. So that was the first time I ever was given that proposition that could take place.
Wow.
So I don't know that it really hit me at that point, just because of the manner in which I was told that. So that's my recollection of it. But that was so long ago, you know, I could be off on the details, but that's what sticks out in my memory. But, you know, that would have been, gosh, you know, more than 20 years now. So it's, you know, it's been a long process as far as what I can see. And I guess part of me is thankful for that, and part of me is not, just because, you know, trying to adjust to what I would describe as a moving target, where I would lose some eyesight and then would kind of become stable and then lose some more gradually over time. And so, you know, I have some friends that have been blind since birth, some friends that became blind later in life due to diseases, some due to, you know, an accident. But it was kind of a moving target, kind of hard to adjust to, just because I would get used to something, and then slowly over time it would change. But to answer your question, yeah, that's my recollection of the first time kind of being given the proposition that either this might happen or it definitely was going to happen. And again, you know, the doctors, they weren't really sure, and they couldn't answer my questions.
So he was just frustrated at all the questions, I guess, the doctor.
That's I think so. That's my opinion. I don't know.
So you talked about your senior. Now, I guess we need to back up again. You were telling me earlier that a lot of folks back in Florence were very instrumental in you making sure you became a Clemson fan. You had a barber, I guess. Can you give some more details on that?
Yeah, I mean, it was just one example that I was telling you about, but, you know, I guess just in general, you know, and this is my opinion, people might disagree with me, but you never know in life when you're doing things, you know, what kind of impact it's going to have on people. And, you know, my barber in Florence, shout out Jackie McGee. He, when I was growing up, 7, 8, 9 years old, he gave me a lot of Clemson stuff, posters and a lot of programs that I read from games he had gone to. My family was very instrumental. My grandma, my Bammy, she had a standing hair appointment, the local beauty parlor, every Saturday, and we spent a lot of Friday nights with her. And they had a little TV in the corner, and she would give me money to get a snack and a drink out of the vending machine. And she would tell the people that she was friends with, and she had become friends with not only the people who owned it, but the people who worked there. And she made sure they would turn the Jefferson Pilot Sports Raycon game of the ACC game of the week on, you know, 3-channel TV in the corner. And she would sit there and get her hair done and make sure I could still watch the football game. You know, I was too young to stay at her house without her. And my mom and dad, they encouraged me to for my passion of sports in general, but, you know, primarily Clemson football. First pair of shoes I ever picked out, I was in first grade, and my mom went to the first PTA meeting, first parent-teacher conference, and this is what she told me. I don't remember this, but that every kid in the class had been required to draw a self-portrait, and that she went to go pick out the picture that I had drawn of myself on the bulletin board outside the classroom. And then she told the teacher, she said, well, that's real simple. That's going to be real easy for me to pick out my child's self-portrait because I don't think anybody else in the first grade has a pair of orange shoes. And apparently I had drawn a stick figure of myself with little orange balls for the shoes. And orange was always my favorite color. And some parents might have died at the idea of their child wearing orange all the time, thinking maybe that their kid would get teased for that or bullied. And they not only, you know, allowed me to do it, but encouraged it, you know, bought me orange clothes or, you know, I had one teacher actually give me a Clemson t-shirt in first grade. And, you know, I was lucky and I had so many people in my life who, encouraged my love of sports and encouraged my love of Clemson football. And that was as a child and as I've, you know, been a student at Clemson and then over the years going to all the football games, I've had so many other friends and family and even a lot of strangers, some of whom I've become good friends with, helped me get to these football games. And so I'm very thankful for that.
What did you study at Clemson?
Well, at the time, my major was speech and communication studies. Unfortunately, I didn't, you know, like I said, it was really struggling with my classes work. So I didn't really get into the degree program too far, just a lot of the general education requirements at first. And maybe if it's in the cards one day, I'd love to go back and finish. But that was my degree at the time.
And so you were in Columbia, I guess, at some point more recently, and then you were able to move up here at some point recently. What are the specifics of that?
Sure. So through the South Carolina Commission for the Blind, I had gone through a program to operate my own vending machine business. And after completing the training for that, I moved to Columbia to run my own vending machine business. And I did that for about a year. And after doing that for about a year, I had an opportunity to move to Anderson, where my girlfriend lives. And I had a job opportunity in Anderson to work in a customer service center. Unfortunately, there were some issues with technology not being compatible between the company's database system and the software that I use, which reads to me what's on the computer screen because I can no longer see it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still looking for another opportunity and hopeful that something will come up soon. But still thankful to be in the upstate and be closer to Clemson for sure.
Tell me about the year running your own vending machine business. What was that like?
It was stressful in a lot of ways. I'm thankful I had the opportunity. And just one of several different jobs that I've had. And the people that I worked with that were my customers inside the building where it was being operated were great to me and very helpful. So it was a good experience, but I was looking to get back as soon as I could to the upstate. And so when I had the opportunity, I tried to go for that as best I could.
What other type of jobs have you had in the past?
Well, most of them that I've done have been customer service based, call center based, where I've taken phone calls and been able to assist customers with whatever their needs were. A lot of that was mortgage-based, working for a company in the Charlotte area. So most of it's been work that's done over the telephone and computer-based. So I'm very blessed that technology has allowed me to do that. And it's something I really enjoy doing, speaking with people. And I'm hopeful that I can find an opportunity in the area, especially if I can find an opportunity at Clemson trying to do something in that same vein where I'm talking with people just because that's something that I really love doing. And I think it's something that I'm good at as well.
Okay. 165 consecutive Clemson football games you've attended, not home games, all games, home, road, playoff, everywhere.
Well, one caveat, no spring games included in total.
Nobody includes those.
Okay. Okay. Just as long as that's clear.
Are you coming to the spring game Saturday?
I don't believe so.
Okay. All right. When did this start? I guess I could do the math, but I'm not good at math.
So beginning of 2007 season.
Okay.
Growing up, my dad had a job where he traveled a lot during the week for his work, and so I can't blame him. He didn't really want to go anywhere too much on the weekends, I don't think. And as you can imagine, with I have two younger brothers, so trying to herd cats to get back and forth from Florence to Clemson would have been an ordeal, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. But we did go to a game here and there growing up. And then when I was a student, I had the opportunity. So, and then, so 2001, 2002, didn't miss any games. And then 2003, my dad helped me get to a couple games. But that year, my mom, who is not a sports fan, a labor of love for her, she actually drove me back and forth from Florence to all the home games and some of the away games. Didn't miss any in 03, and I was living in Clemson in 04, and I missed the Miami game at the old Orange Bowl in 04. So missed one game from 01 to 04, and then 2005, only made it to a couple of games. 2006, made it to a handful of games. So starting 2007, I was working in the Charleston area and met somebody that was going to all the home games. So that made it a lot easier once I was able to locate somebody and find a good ride back and forth. And so from there, it was really my goal to not miss any games. And like I said, I've been very blessed that so many people have helped me get back and forth and make it to all these games. And I can't really take credit for it myself, even though it's something I really love doing and something I'm really passionate about. I've met people who have been to a lot more games than I have in a row, without missing one. And I'm just very thankful for all the people that I've met, all the experiences I've had. Love traveling and just love the experience of going to a football game.
Most of these games you've gone to by yourself?
It depends on the situation. So for pretty much all the home games, I stand by myself on the hill. So that way I'm as close to the band as possible. As much as I love football, I love Tiger Band. And, I'm just thankful that we have the best public address announcer in the world, Dale Gilbert, and voice of Tiger Band, Mr. Tim Willis. So I had the fortune of meeting at the national championship game. After the game, we were down there celebrating, so I was glad to meet him. And through the band and through Dale Gilbert and Tim Willis, I'm able to tell what's going on in the game.
So your connection, your, I don't want to say lifeline, but your path to figure out what's going on is, okay, you know what the band plays when they get a first down.
Right.
The abbreviated Tiger Rag, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
The cannon, obviously, touchdown. I mean,
And then so okay, I have tuned Dale Gilbert out, I guess, because I'm thinking about other stuff, you know,
sure,
writing it down and stuff. So, what does he do that's so crucial? I guess just the frequency of his updates, I guess.
Right. Well, and just saying, you know, it's first down on the 35-yard line, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, because I have an advantage over a lot of my friends who are blind that they do not have, unfortunately, and that's that I had eyesight for the first, you know, almost half of my life. And so I know what's going on, and I've been following football since I was probably 5 or 6 years old. So, you know, I might not be able to tell you exactly what happened on the play because I can't see it until somebody tells me or until I hear a replay that's more descriptive after the game, maybe, for example. But I have a really good idea of what's going on in the game. So the hardest thing to keep up with is how much time's left in the game. But a lot of times I will ask somebody who's near me, or I'll break out my phone out of my pocket and ask Siri with the, you know, the technology's great, and then be able to find out how much time's left. And, you know, even though I can't really see it anymore, you know, I'm still able to follow along based on my hearing. And so, you know, I'm real thankful for that.
And you don't wear a radio headset?
I don't, just because that's how I'm used to doing it. So I guess I'm a curmudgeon and stubborn that way.
And so you choose the hill because that's familiar and you can feel it with your feet. Is that right?
Well, so a few things. So number one, there's no stairs to get to the hill. So that's helpful. Really just, you know, there's kind of like a one step down from the pavement to the grass. And even though I can't see anymore, just with it being a familiar area because of when I could see better when I was in school. So I'm just kind of used to that area of the stadium. And also, I want to be as close to the band as I can be. And I want to be as close to the PA system as I can be. And so the speakers are right behind the hill. So that's why I've always gone there.
I want to bring up
I would say not all PA announcers are created equal. Going to a lot of the away stadiums around the ACC and other schools who shall remain nameless, all PA systems and announcers are not created equal. So I'm very thankful that – I'm not just saying this because I'm a Clemson fan or just because, I mean, in all reality, I mean, it's my opinion, and people maybe disagree, but – we have the best announcers, Dale Gilbert and Tim Willis.
I mean, some.
So we have the best.
I mean, some PA announcers will just say first down. That's it.
I mean, some of them might not even say that. I mean, there are a lot of awful ones out there, in my opinion. So Dale and Tim are the best, and I'm very thankful that we have them at Clemson.
I want to bring up a couple of plays that come to mind, and I want to be in your shoes.
Sure.
What you were thinking, you know, how you ascertained what was happening.
Okay.
So, okay, let's say in Tampa, 6 seconds left, and Clemson has the ball.
Okay.
Okay, take me through that.
Well, I mean, obviously I hope we score a touchdown to win the game, but if not, then I mean, we have a chip shot field goal to go to overtime, and we'd worn them down in the second half. So,
you know. No, I'm just saying, how did you, like, how were you gathering where the ball was, and then once it happened,
sure,
you knew they scored, but.
So I was asking people around me for how much time was left in the game, and because I knew a timeout had been called, I might not have been sure if we called timeout or if Alabama did. I apologize. I don't know how many timeouts were left for which team at that point, you know, a couple of years later. But, you know, I was asking people around me for, you know, some of the details, especially as far as how much time's left. And I knew we scored, but I didn't know how much time was left on the clock when we scored. But I just got mobbed by everybody. So everybody did, I'm sure. Everybody could just kind of got pushed and jostled, and everybody was just jumping up and down and celebrating. So I knew we had scored a touchdown. I didn't know exactly what had happened at that point.
So
I found out after the game, and or maybe even after the play. I don't remember exactly, but, you know, find out, you know, how much time's left, when we scored, and what the play was, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm just wondering how quickly you felt the urge just to sort of get the play diagram in your mind. Okay, Deshaun rolled right
to Hunter.
And then, right, you know, Artavis came across, and then, you know, trying to get the image in your mind, like, of exactly what happened.
That I probably didn't know until after the game exactly what had happened on the play.
Mm-hmm.
I just knew we had scored and we were going to win national championship. So I was too excited. I might not have even cared at that point. Yeah, we found out later.
The pick six this past national championship game, AJ Terrell, take me to that one.
Wasn't sure what happened. Was just kind of jumping up and down. Knew something good had happened, and my friend Scott that I was at with the game, he told me what happened. So
okay,
yeah.
What about something just totally freaky, like in the first national championship against Alabama, the onside kick, like something you're totally not expecting, and you hear everybody going, "Oh crap!"
I kind of heard more of the Alabama fans like cheering. I think, yeah. That was really disheartening, obviously, for all of us, and wasn't exactly sure what happened. And I think I was actually had met up with a friend at that game. I had flown to Vegas and met up with a friend and rode with him from Vegas down to Glendale, and he was sitting somewhere else in the stadium, but he'd helped me get to my seat, and so. You know, there are Clemson fans around, but, you know, in that situation, I'm probably scrambling a little bit more to try and find out actually what happened. But based on the crowd noise, you can tell it wasn't good for us in that example.
Big supporter of the podcast and bigger supporter of Clemson Athletics and Clemson University is Harris Flooring America, based in Anderson, South Carolina. And they've got their footprint, I guess you could say, all over the upstate, all over Clemson. They have done work for BMW, the football operations facility, otherwise known as Dabo Land, Memorial Stadium, the Neary Center, the Greenville Drive, and of late, the McFadden Building, getting a much-needed renovation that includes some pristine flooring from Harris Flooring America. They have been family-owned and operated since 1947. The owner, Scott Junkins, is a big Clemson guy. He employs Clemson folks. They offer a unique shopping experience through value in their services, developing the right product solutions for your home or business, and delivering on their promises. And can't emphasize that enough, even though it named a lot of businesses. They also serve the residential segments. For homeowners, Harris offers floor-to-ceiling design capabilities as well. So give them a call, 864-642-6183, or online at flooringamerica-anderson.com.
How about the Lamar Jackson, when Marcus Edmund gets him out of bounds there on that last play in 2016? Yeah. Where were you?
Was that against Jalen Smith, Louisville?
I'm sorry, not Lamar Jackson. Yeah, you're.
It well, he was a receiver. I mean, it was Lamar.
It was quick. It was.
It was quick. Okay, was quick. I apologize. I'm pretty sure. Jalen Smith. It was quick.
Yeah,
it was one of Louisville receivers. Evans kind of.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
just couldn't really hear anything before the play started, just because it was so loud, and we were trying to make as much noise as possible, and just wasn't sure what happened, but knew we stopped him, so knew we were going to win the game. So. Sometimes it's I really don't know the detail of what happened, but I know overall what happened. We stopped them. It's, you know, I knew it was fourth down, and so I knew there wasn't much time left in the game. We were going to win.
So
that was a back and forth game, wasn't it?
Yeah, man. Great game, just incredible.
Until the last two, we had so many close games with Louisville.
Yeah,
the last two have been blowouts. But
well, another one that comes to mind is in 14 when Jayron Kearse ran down. I guess it was it quick? I forgot, but he was going to score, and Kirsch came from way over on the other side of the field. Anyway, yeah, a lot of great games in those few years. So you took a bus out to Glendale for the 2016 semifinal for against Ohio State.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Had more time than money at that point. Really wanted to go. And, you know, I guess like a lot of Clemson fans, I'm somewhat obsessed and I don't want to miss a game. And, you know, I checked into the different routes and different ways that I could try and get out there. And this was an option. And, you know, it was after the Christmas holiday and, you know, around New Year's. And so, you know, flying's great, but at the same time, trying to get to an airport in Atlanta or in Charlotte would have been an obstacle, even though I've done that at times. But, you know, a lot of times trying to get to Atlanta or Charlotte for a flight to get to a game, the few times I've done that, I've had somebody who could take me there, or somebody who could pick me up in Atlanta or Charlotte and get me to the airport. And for whatever reason, at that time, I didn't have that option. So it was a lot easier for me just to – I was living in Columbia at the time, so it was just a lot easier to get on the bus in Columbia and just take Greyhound all the way out. And you know, I'm very thankful. When I lived in Charlotte from 08, you know, until like 2013, I would take the train down for all the home games. And so Amtrak, Greyhound, and whatever flight carrier as well, like, everybody is very helpful. You know, I just call ahead of time and say, hey, you know, I'm going from this city to that city, and here's the route I'm taking, here's the schedule, and, you know, here's my reservation number or whatever, and can you please help me? And you would be surprised, not only the employees of those companies, but also just strangers that I meet riding on those buses or trains or flights. Everybody, you know, and this world's not perfect, and I'm not, and I imagine you're not either, and, you know, none of us are perfect, but, and there are a lot of bad people out there, but, you know, I've been very blessed to run into a lot of good people that have helped me. And so in that example, it was a, even though it was a lot longer distance on Greyhound to get out to Phoenix from Columbia and Greyhound as opposed to a flight, in some ways it was easier for me. And I didn't mind it, and we won 31-0. And coming out after the game, my buddy and I had some Ohio State fans say, hey, thanks for ruining our vacation out here. So it was great, and we won the national title, you know, a couple weeks later. So it was well worth it.
Is the question you get most often on those trips, well, who's with you?
That's one, if I'm going by myself.
Yeah.
Or I'm sure a lot of people are thinking it, even if they don't say it, hey, you're an idiot. Why are you doing this? And I'm doing it because I want to and because I love it. And so, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who would want to do it who haven't had the opportunity, and I'm thankful I've had the opportunity to do it too. And I'm not lost on that fact.
Okay, so you take the bus from Columbia to Phoenix.
We had a couple stops, but yes.
Okay, how many? Did you count?
I don't remember. I'm sure I've got it saved somewhere where I've got the route saved to where we had to transfer and that kind of thing.
2 days each way?
2 days each way, roughly, yes.
Okay, so you get to Phoenix, though. Glendale is a hike from Phoenix.
Well, I had one of my friends pick me up at the bus station in Phoenix.
Okay.
Thankfully. That saved me a little bit.
One thing you said a minute ago is when you lived in Charlotte, you took the train here. Did you got dropped off right there on 123 in college?
Yes, the Amtrak station.
Okay. Okay, take me through the routine. Like, what do? You get off the...
So I would be working Friday, you know, 8 to 5. And sometimes I'd come home and take a nap. Sometimes I wouldn't because I'd be too wired and amped up to go. And I'd leave my apartment at, you know, 11:30 p.m. or midnight, somewhere around there, and go down to the bus station. It was just, you know, like a couple-minute walk just down the block. Get on that bus, go down to the light rail, and take the light rail down to downtown, go Amtrak, get to Clemson, and either hang out in the little shelter thing they have there.
What time?
We'll get to Clemson somewhere between 5:30 or 6 a.m.
On Saturday.
On Saturday morning. And then my friend would come and get me and let me crash on his couch sometimes. Or I would hang out in there until he could come get me. And then we would go to the game and hang out all day. And hopefully we would win. And, you know, but if we lost, we still had a good time for the most part. And then he would take me back to the train station at 10 p.m. And then I would get back to Charlotte like 1 a.m. And one of my friends who was a cabbie would pick me up because the light rail was shut down at that time. And he would take me to go get some fast food, and I'd go home and watch ESPN's coverage of the football that day and eat some fast food and crash. And I loved it.
So what if it's a night game? Obviously, you can't take the 10 o'clock.
Right, right. So then I have to try and make arrangements to crash with a friend and then go back Sunday night. And, you know, when I was working, I would do my best to save up all my vacation time for football season. So, and my manager knew that, and she was excellent at working with me to make sure that I wouldn't miss a game. And even now, I haven't been working there in a few years. And anytime she sees Clemson in the news, she always thinks of me, and she'll call me or text me and say, you know, Clemson's doing great, and I was thinking of you. So, like I said, I was thankful for the opportunity to be able to go to all the games.
All right. So in Glendale, you met through a friend, a student who was in the communications department at Clemson and who was doing some social media stuff for the football program.
Yes.
Her name is Madison Williams.
That's correct.
Yeah. And so on the way back to the bus station, as you're about to get dropped off, she's asking you, why are you going to the bus station? And you're telling her exactly what you're up to.
Because I'm taking the bus back to Columbia, and I'm sure she was thinking, what an idiot. Why is he doing this?
All right, and so at some point thereafter, she contacts you wanting to do a video story that she she wanted to enter into a
student film contest.
Student film contest.
Yes, sir.
For the Cannes? How do you pronounce
well,
that?
I'm not sure. Con, I believe. But okay. There was a student film contest that was being held at Clemson, and she entered it, and she won the I guess there were different qualifying levels. And so she won the Clemson portion of that and got to move on to the national competition. And from there, she was selected with her video to have it shown at the Cannes Film Festival.
And
she did a great job.
That's a feature on you.
It is. Yeah. She asked me a couple months after we won the national title if I would be willing to allow her to kind of do a feature on me on how I experience the football game, even though I can't really see it anymore.
And so for this feature, she shot you sitting in the football stadium and
kind of walking around the football stadium, mm-hmm. I think, and mm-hmm. Like kind of walking down the hill, and she also interviewed me somewhat, kind of like what you're doing, and she asked me questions kind of about my experience and my history of losing my eyesight and some of the same questions you've asked me as well, and so she had that on the video as well. It was 5 minutes or under, I believe, was the criteria.
Yep. All right. And so also in that video, toward the end, it says, little did Bryson know, but his story attracted the attention of a certain someone, basically. And that someone is Dabo Swinney.
Yes.
All right. So you... After you were at the stadium shooting for this video, you go back home to Columbia, correct?
Correct.
And then at some point soon thereafter, she calls you, Madison.
I think it was a couple months later. Yes,
okay,
sir.
And says,
when's the next time you're going to be in Clemson? And my girlfriend was in on this as well. They basically lied to me. They said that the Tiger student newspaper and the Greenville News wanted to talk to me about the video that she had done that had been they had won the student film contest that she had entered. So
it had already won the student contest, but it had yet to win the or
it had yet to be shown at Comm, but it had already won the Clemson portion of the contest. Yes, sir.
Okay, and so you come up
thinking I'm going to be interviewed about the film that she did, the video
By the Tiger student newspaper
and the Greenville News. I was
and
told.
The Greenville News. Okay, and then you're taken to Dabo's office.
Yes,
and. At what point,
and I thought I was meeting with a newspaper.
At what point did you know that this was a ruse? That
I didn't.
Something was up. Okay.
I didn't.
Okay.
And so I was talking with Madison and my girlfriend in his office. And Madison asked me a question, basically something like, what would you say to Dabo if he asked you about your experience? And I was answering her question, and Madison basically said something like, well, why don't you tell him? He's right over there.
Wow.
So.
And then, and this is captured on the video. I guess there are two different videos because this was later edited in.
Correct.
Okay, that makes more sense.
The video that she shot that was entered in the student competition did not have the portion edited in where I met with Dabo. So that was shot after she had entered the student competition.
What did he say that resonated with you the most or that was the most important to you?
He basically said, and I have paraphrased because I don't remember exact words, but something to the effect of that he realized how important Clemson football is to the fans and how it matters how much, how they play. Regardless of the outcome, win or loss, just that they show the effort because for the fans, it's a great escape for those 3-4 hours. Plus, that's the length of the game, but then, the travel and tailgate and all the rest of it and that's a great escape from the reality of your week, whatever is going on for you.
And then,
and so he understood that.
And then after that, he tells you, "I want you to talk to my team."
He did, and I didn't know that was going to happen either.
And this was that same
day,
the same visit.
Yes, sir.
And then, so y'all walked down to the team meeting room.
I believe it was one of the meeting rooms. I'm not sure, but it's somewhere in the new facility, the football facility. I believe it was one of the meeting rooms.
And what do you remember from – what did you say?
I don't remember exactly, and I don't believe that part was filmed, but I basically just said, look, as a football player at Clemson, you have to be so careful of everything that you do just because you're a celebrity, because you're a Clemson football player. And I didn't know that any of this was going to happen to me talking to you today or – having the opportunity to talk with Dabo or Madison asking me to be involved with her film project for her student contest. I was just going about living my life the best I could of enjoying going to football games. And for whatever reason, somebody took notice of that. And so I just said, I wouldn't be here today if somebody hadn't taken notice for whatever reason they did. And so you have to be so careful, and I think everybody does in society, but especially that they do, being on campus, that they're being watched, even if they don't realize it. Everything they do, everything they say is being taken notice, and they have such a platform because of what they do, who they are, because they're a football player. And I didn't realize that somebody had taken notice of what I was doing. I was just going to a football game. So, and I'm guilty of it, and I'm sure we all are at points that we don't realize that what we do, what we say, that's being observed by somebody. And the things that we do and the things that we say, like, that's impacting people, even if we don't realize it.
How often do you think about how much technology has impacted how you go through life compared to, say, someone 30 years ago who's going through the same thing?
I may not realize it, you know, on a daily basis or weekly basis. I may not think about it that often. And unfortunately, you know, I'm guilty of this. I think probably a lot of us are. We take things for granted. But, yeah, I can't imagine how much my life is improved because of technology that is available to me today and all the other blind and visually impaired users that wasn't there 20 years ago, 30 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago, or that technology is available today because we live in the greatest country in the history of the world, in my opinion, but somebody halfway around the world might not have access to. And so I'm very blessed. And I probably don't realize that or don't acknowledge that as much as I should. But, you know, we all probably go through, or a lot of us go through life where we take things for granted. But, no, you're right. I mean, technology has really greatly, vastly improved my life. It allowed me to do things I couldn't do otherwise, or made things easier for me.
What's the most important piece of technology for you in your daily life?
So, two, I have a smartphone that has VoiceOver on it. And so that just makes communicating with people easier, since I can no longer see the screen on the phone. You know, whether it's making a phone call or receiving a phone call or sending a text message or listening to your podcast or being able to surf the internet. And then there's also a similar product that's available for a computer. And so, you know, that allows me to type a document or make a list or, you know, go on the internet or, you know, a thousand other things that either I wouldn't be able to do at all or would be a lot more difficult if I didn't have this technology available to me.
Is there anything we haven't talked about that I've missed that you'd like to talk about?
I just want to thank everyone that's made it possible for me to, you know, really follow my passion as Clemson football. And there are other things in life that I enjoy, that I love, but probably not anyone greater than this. And I'm just real thankful for all my friends, family, strangers. And, you know, I could start trying to list all of those people. And I'm sure I would leave people out, so I'm a little hesitant to start naming people. And but I'm real thankful for all the opportunities I've had and all the people who have helped me along the way. And go Tigers, of course.
So a few hours ago, I posted on the Tiger Illustrated message board that I was going to be interviewing you. And multiple people mentioned they had met you, like, at road games, like, whether at Maryland or wherever. Like, I remember him. Man, he's a great guy.
Sure.
You know? That's really cool to see.
Yeah. Sometimes I run into the same people over in different games, and they'd be like, you know, and a lot of us are bad with names probably, but you know, I kind of remember you, but you know, I might not remember your name, but Clemson family is amazing, and I'm sure every school thinks they have the best fans or the best family atmosphere, but obviously I'm biased, but I think Clemson does, so I'm thankful for all the orange. Wearing orange-blooded people out there who've helped me.
Bryson Carter, remarkable story, remarkable person. Keep that streak up, man.
I'm
guessing it's not going to end anytime soon with the way things are going.
You never know. I hope not. August 29th in the Valley against the Jackets. Be ready for that one.
We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Larry.
All right. Thank you, too, Bryson Carter. Man, what a cool story there. Fun conversation. Just a remarkable, remarkable man, remarkable story. Thanks to him for taking his time out. Thanks to the Abernathy for being such a good host for that interview. Also, thank you to our title sponsor, Parham Smith & Archenthold Law Firm. Get yourself a koozie. Go by there sometime, downtown Greenville. I'm sure they got some koozies laying around there. Also, in Greenville, Tandem Payment. And last but definitely not least, Harris Flooring America in Anderson. And thank all of you so much for making this a part of your routine. Everybody have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week. Cheers. We'll be right back.